So this morning we heard about cat perils and cat models. My name's Andy White and I'll be chairing the session, the first session this afternoon, looking at reinsurance and how it can be used together with capital to manage risk with an appetite for an organisation. Over the last couple of years, we've had the LAGIC capital reforms, including the introduction of the insurance concentration risk charge. We've had the ICAP. We've had increasing use of capital models, DFA tools and scenarios. And all of these have contributed to make insurers think in different ways about their capital targets and how reinsurance can be used as part of that process. Of course, there's also lots of other motivations for buying reinsurance, such as protecting your balance sheet, minimising variability in your P&L, and protecting your franchise value. This session will have slightly more time for questions than the previous sessions, so please feel free to SMS in as we're going to 0409 587 381. We'll also have a roving microphone at the end if technology is not your thing. And we are happy to take comments as well, although please try to contain yourselves and keep those to a minute or two. Can get quite an exciting topic. Also a reminder, we've had lunch, so please put your phones back on silent if you took them off silent in the first place. And talking of lunch, you're probably all feeling a little bit sleepy. But thankfully, we have three excellent presenters who are going to wake you up. I'll introduce the first of those now. So that's John Carroll, who's head of broking for Aon Benfield Australia, with a focus on the provision of technical services to Aon Benfield's Australian clients. This includes reinsurance advice, analysis, negotiation, and placement. John joined Aon Benfield in September 2011, and before that was head of broking at Guy Carp Australia. Prior to Guy Carp, John spent 16 years with Swiss Re, with his last role being head of client management for Swiss Re's Australian and New Zealand operations. John is a fellow of the Australia-New Zealand Institute of Insurance and Finance. And John's going to talk to us today about some of the key considerations for reinsurance, including, as I said before, the interplay between capital and reinsurance. John will talk about the value proposition of reinsurance, and I'm sure he'll probably convince a few of us we should be buying more of it as well. So on that, I'll hand over to John.
Thanks, Andy. I don't think there's any trouble convincing people to buy reinsurance. Probably my challenge is to convince people to pay brokers to actually buy it for them. But that's probably not today's seminar. That's somewhere else. Thanks for the invitation to be here today. I'm not sure what task is harder, speaking after lunch or being the warm-up act for Mr. Burkett. Looks like I've kind of got both of those jobs today. So I suppose I'd better suck it up and just get on with it. If I can work this thing. My remit today is Reinsurance 101, a presentation that's designed at a very quick and dirty level to examine the role of reinsurance and the different approaches that can be taken in regard to reinsurance protections and some of the considerations that need to be examined before purchasing cat reinsurance. All of that in about 20 minutes, so if I speak quickly or in very general terms, please do forgive me. When I wrote my notes, I thought this slide would come up terribly because I sort of pictured a very big room, but actually, probably you can get a few laughs out of it. I noticed that you're all pausing politely before laughing hysterically. look, insurance and reinsurance, at their core, there's a number of different definitions of what they are and what its actual practitioners get up to. I'm thinking that's Andrew Husko on the bottom right down there. Ty is definitely bottom left. And I think I do a bit of the other four. But the underlying essence of reinsurance is as the slide graphically captures there, is that reinsurance is a source of wholesale capital for insurers. And I use the word wholesale very, very specifically because if you ask any retailer of goods how they stay in business, and their response is going to focus on the quality and consistency of supply from their wholesalers and their ability to manage and or pass on the cost of that wholesale inputs. Whilst insurance is an intangible product, the wholesale capital dynamic is as important for an insurer as it is for any retailer of so-called tangible goods. I thought this slide actually might be out of order, but since I'd already given them to the Institute, I couldn't sort of change them around, and I don't want to sort of jump ahead and backwards. But this slide here is designed to look at the key reasons why companies purchase reinsurance. And we've touched on the capital aspect, so I'm going to sort of gloss over surplus capital relief at the moment. But look at other driving forces, such as the ability to smooth income and reduce the volatility of earnings of an insurance company over time. Arbitrage, it's not a dirty word. At its simplest, any goods sold in one market should sell for the same price in another. So $100 of reinsurance capital should cost the same in Australia and the US, but it doesn't because of the diversification dynamics of international portfolios of business. There's also some other excellent examples, and I'd like to use lender's mortgage insurance to demonstrate. The APRA capital charges for this product are somewhat onerous and at the upper end compared to what other jurisdictions actually have in place. So a local LMI underwriter purchasing reinsurance definitely gets capital relief from that transaction. But if the entity that they're transacting with has exactly the same capital charge basis, then the actual cost of that is actually not going to be very effective. Yet if you can deal with a reinsurer who has a different capital regime around placing or selling LMI insurance, the cost advantage can be quite significant. And I was sitting down at lunch and I heard the other arbitrage today that I should have mentioned, that was Berkshire Hathaway. Expense ratios. So an expense ratio for a Swiss Re or a reinsurance company is 15, 20, 25 points. I know you get paid a lot of money, Blair, but you've got to be a 1% expense ratio in terms of the size of a Berkshire Hathaway group. And so, as I say, arbitrage is not a dirty word. It's actually just commercially sensible. Got access to reinsurer expertise. In addition to capital relief, reinsurance relationships can be quite important in terms of accessing highly specialist underwriters and or claims management staff. A good example there is life reinsurance. Now, life insurers buy a lot of reinsurance, but they don't necessarily buy it for capital benefits. They buy it to access medical underwriting expertise on substandard lives, and high-valued lives. And this is a sort of service that reinsurers give for free in terms of their value proposition. So they get some reinsurance in return for it, but they provide a lot of expertise to the life insurance company. Using reinsurance to deselect or de-emphasise the spiky or hazardous exposures within a portfolio helps to create a manageable and profitable portfolio of risks. This is effectively reinsurance assisting in homogenising a non-homogenous portfolio. I'm very glad that there was no alcohol at lunch. I wouldn't have got that one out. And the final point there is managing the cost of capital for an insurer. Reinsurance is capital. So understanding the cost, gearing and access to capital dynamics are just as important for reinsurance as they are for any other form of capital funding. So including reinsurance thinking in your capital management planning can therefore actually reduce the total weighted average cost of capital for any particular organisation. So the key functions of reinsurance, and I think for this slide certainly, reinsurance and insurance are exactly the same. The transfer of risk, reducing individual consumer exposure to cat events, at the same time fulfilling the essential insurance tenet that the losses of the few are paid for by the premiums of the many. Funding and adjusting losses, by accumulating capital resources to pay for those losses. And this is pre-funding rather than post-funding. The key value of an insurance or reinsurance product is the ability to pay post a loss to enable an insured to start to rebuild as quickly as possible and to operate without the burden that excessive financial drain of a post-funding environment would impose on that insured. And finally, the identification and pricing of risk. And this is where we factor in long-term loss potential and risk into economic decision-making before an event occurs. Now, reinsurers are often criticised for their pricing views on risk. And whilst we can argue extensively over what the actual correct price of risk might be, we can't argue the need to make an allowance for the longer-term risk potentials, i.e. catastrophes. And at a minimum, this dialogue should be a cause for pause in the pricing and underwriting of exposures that insurers and reinsurers are increasingly being asked by society to take away from them. This dialogue, both in terms of risk awareness and the cost of risk mitigation, also helps inform community debate on the value of insurance and where finite capital or investment resources should be optimally deployed. Reinsurance is killing me. I hear this quite a lot from my insurance clients at the moment. And following the frequency and severity of loss events in Australia and New Zealand from 2009 through to 2011, there was significant blame apportioned to the reinsurance industry. To the man in the street, reinsurance was the reason why their home premiums went up while they doubled. And this was lapped up by the media and promulgated by in sensational style by A Current Affair and The Daily Telegraph, as they excel at. On the other side of the ledger, for some insurance executives, and I'm sure none of them are in the room here today, increased reinsurance costs were negatively impacting their underwriting performance. Hang on, 2012, I didn't have any claims. This increased reinsurance cost, that's eating into my margins. What am I paying for? This is killing me. So was that a clap? Sorry, I thought someone was clapping there. So hold the applause to the end. I thought that this excerpt from a paper by Anthony Day, Suncorp, large client of Aon Benfield, that's why I used it, hit the nail on the head regarding the value of reinsurance. Reinsurance lowers the cost of insurance. It allows companies to purchase capital cheaper than if they had to provide it themselves. reinsurance is an enabler, and it frees up capital to reinvest in the business proposition for their customers. And I thought that was just two of the best paragraphs I've seen around the value of reinsurance. But you're actuaries, I'm a mathematician, so I like numbers. If we really want to tackle it, we've got to look at numbers. And now this is an apology to IAG, because I'm presenting here a really simple proof of the power of reinsurance. And I'll leave you to focus on the numbers while I just sort of talk away here. There are a huge number of caveats in this simple set of numbers, and for anyone recording this, please don't go and run away and say, I've cracked the code for IAG's reinsurance spend. We're assuming that the spend here, 817, is only in relation to catastrophe business, which it isn't. We're ignoring the fact that results included significant reinsurance recovery in 2013, June 2013. We're ignoring changes in investment income if we were to increase our capital base, and we're ignoring the fact that there'd be increased volatility of result if we had no reinsurance. And we're also assuming that the 4.5 billion that IAG buy to is their minimum solvency level, minimum ICRC level from an APRA perspective, just to make the numbers sort of simple. And at that simple and high level overview, what the numbers show is without reinsurance, IAG would likely need almost three times the amount of regulatory capital that it currently holds. It goes from $4.2 billion to $11.5 billion. This additional regulatory capital would flow through to their average equity. I've just taken a very sort of simple ratio there. Average equity would have to go from $4.8 billion to $12.8 billion. Not purchasing reinsurance saves IAG a significant amount of premium, about $800 million a year. That would go straight to their bottom line. And effectively, $800 on $776 doubles their retained earnings. But if IAG run the same capital margins, 1.67 times, and arguably they might want to increase these if they're not actually taking insurance because their book's a little bit volatile, their return on equity is going to drop by a quarter. Now the numbers are loose and they represent a single point in time view. And we can spin it any number of ways you like, but if I was an IAG shareholder, actually even an IAG executive manager, and I had the choice of with or without reinsurance, I'd find the with reinsurance argument quite compelling. And I suppose I might also add here that that reinsurance spend, or the reinsurance spend at that point in time, is post all the losses, so that's at its highest level. So the numbers are actually even more dramatic if you flick back 2 or 3 years time when they're buying $4.5 billion for a lot less spend. So the question is, why is reinsurance capital cheaper than insurance capital? This simple example, and have you noticed now that I actually like simple things, attempts to demonstrate. You have two populations of 1,000 people. Population A all reside on one single island, and population B spread over 1,000 islands. We assume that hurricanes cause total destruction, but they only make landfall once a year, and they only hit one island per year. So portfolio A is significantly less efficient because this economy has to hold significant slack resources to rebuild. Whereas economy B, when one island is fallen down, then the other sort of 999 communities can contribute to that particular rebuild. So, of course, the probability of a loss occurring on for economy A is significantly less, but it's the capital and the slack resources that they need to hold. Excuse me. And this is the diversification benefit of reinsurance. International reinsurers having multiple uncorrelated portfolios compared to a single state insurer in Australia who have all their risk eggs in the one basket. Now, the obvious flaw is that only one island is hit per year. We've certainly seen examples in real life where diversified and uncorrelated portfolios of Perth, Melbourne, Queensland and New Zealand exposures have all been hit in a relatively short space of time. As a result, reinsurance rates increased locally quite significantly. But importantly, and we'll touch on this a bit later on, they still remain incredibly efficient given the scale of exposures in those particular portfolios compared to the international reinsurance exposures in peak zones such as Japan, Europe and America. Here's one that I hope people can spot the deliberate flaw in the mathematics there. If you could just send me a text when you've worked it out. And it's just about pooling portfolios which are uncorrelated to form a new portfolio that has a lower variance. And it's the variance aspect that is the important measure. If we only had expected losses every year, we wouldn't need to hold any capital. We could simply price in advance for the expected losses. But the fact that losses have such a variance is why we need capital reserves. The greater the variance, the more capital required. The ability to manage down the variance directly, therefore, impacts the amount of capital we need to hold for a portfolio. And this is what purchasing reinsurance is doing for your capital management and how reinsurers are actually operating in that variance space. So diversification explains why reinsurance is cheaper than insurance, but why is Australia and New Zealand reinsurance cheaper than Florida? Well, because Australia and New Zealand catastrophe risk totals about 20 to 25 billion or so. And that can be diversified in many locations globally, whereas the peak risks in Florida can only be diversified in about three or four different scenarios. I thought I'd just touch on the actual types of reinsurance, and I have to apologise, I don't know what the level of reinsurance knowledge is here. I look around and see a lot of brokers, so I'm going to assume it's very basic. I'm only going to talk about treaty reinsurance and not the difference between treaty and facultative. So proportional reinsurance, and we get 2.5 points brokers, just for the brokers in the room, where reinsurers share proportionally in the business, and it's a straight equity partnership. So we have quota share reinsurance, which is the ideal solution. It is exactly how insurance and reinsurance theory began, the sharing of risks. Surplus reinsurance is akin to a variable quota share, whereby you cede away risks of a certain size, and you don't cede away all the risks within your portfolio. The key point about proportional reinsurance is it is dollar one involvement by the reinsurer. They're involved in all claims on risks that you cede, and they make contributions to the original acquisition expenses of the insurer. They are truly a side-by-side partner in the insurance transaction. With proportional reinsurance, a reinsurer's fortunes are directly linked to the original pricing and risk selection abilities of an insurer. Non-proportional reinsurance, 10 points brokerage, the interests here are not directly aligned. And this method is best described as volatility protection, where the reinsurer takes away the spikes in the business. Majority of cat business is placed on an excess of loss basis. And in this form of reinsurance, the reinsurer is only involved in losses above a certain level. They're not involved in the minutiae of acquiring business or all policies being ceded. Non-proportional reinsurance is essentially distanced from original pricing considerations because the reinsurer doesn't follow the fortunes of whether your rates are going up or down. But the cost of non-proportional reinsurance should very much be a factor in the building up the original rate charged by an insurer. And this is a very explicit example of the wholesale capital dynamic, where you want to cede away all losses above $100 million and the reinsurer says, I'll do that for 1 cent. Well, 1 cent needs to be added to your 6 cents that you're charging to the original insurer to make a total of 7 cents. Pay reinsurer, pay the 6 cents that you need for your retention. I suppose the question is, why would you consider different approaches? Well, sophistication of the insurer is an important thing. If you put aside the capital impact, a sophisticated client will have less need or desire for a reinsurer to partner in the day-to-day activities of their business. They might lean towards excess of loss. Access to capital, however. A well-capitalised listed company with good access to capital is likely to choose non-proportional reinsurance. A small niche mutual company is going to rely heavily on proportional. It's their best source of reinsurance capital, best source of capital. It's not to suggest that a listed company won't seek to harness the power of reinsurance capital via proportional solutions, however. And this probably is why there's no textbook answer. There's no one-size-fits-all. A combination of all reinsurance options needs to be considered to deal with each problem at hand. Every insurer is different in terms of their business model, capital and funding approach, and their underlying profit and earnings motives. And as such, every reinsurance solution is therefore bespoke. Regardless of the reinsurance approach, the question is how much business gets retained by the insurer, be it the retention on the quota share, the retention on the risk excess of loss. And that function, the retention equation, is a function of a company's objectives in relation to profit margin, capital base, how big is it, how much access do they have to other capital, and how much volatility is it willing to retain, and finally, their risk appetite. Now, I've seen some great actuarial papers on retention setting that have all complicated formula for retention setting. Every formula is the same, though. With respect to risk appetite, it's simply represented as a constant K that comes from the board. I'm really looking forward to seeing whether Andrew Husko convinces us all that gut feel can be actuarially quantified. As I come towards the end, the next two slides cover off a lot of the key considerations that if this was like a 60 or 90 minute presentation, I'd go in great depth on these. But I'm just going to throw out these considerations or statements to perhaps generate some thoughts, some questions later on, or perhaps even questions when you get back to the office. My first favourite is cost of reinsurance is not equal to spend on reinsurance. Cost of reinsurance is a function of the spend on reinsurance, less commissions, less claims recoveries, less capital and volatility relief. It's a source of great frustration to me when I see analysts draw comparisons to reinsurance cession ratios and or companies seeking to reduce their reinsurance spend in the same way as you might like to reduce your travel expenses. It also leads to people thinking that proportional reinsurance is not an ideal solution because the spend is so high. True, for a similar amount of capital relief, you may be ceding away more premium, but you have to consider the net position. Think about this. If you spent $200 on reinsurance and it produced $1,000 of capital benefit, at a cost of 20%, this might be more expensive than your own cost of capital. If the dynamic, though, is a spend of $200 and claims recoveries of $180, for the same capital benefit, this is an excellent and very efficient reinsurance purchase. Reinsurance capital is cheaper than that of insurance capital. I want to qualify this, because we're not saying that Swiss Re's hurdle rate is different to, say, RACQ's. They both might be looking to make 12% ROE. It's just that for the same level of risk being assumed, Swiss Re need to hold less capital than RACQ. Hence, the capital cost in the pricing is lower than that of RACQ. Reinsurers actually expect to make money at the same rate as insurers, in fact, often at greater rates than insurers, because their portfolios are significantly more volatile. Reinsurance is a powerful, flexible, and readily available capital substitute. And reinsurance can free up capital to be used within a company. And I draw you back to Anthony Day's comments, to invest in the business. This is important. If you free up capital by using reinsurance, you need to do something with it. Otherwise, you've freed up all this capital and you've got a very high capital base and your returns are likely to be reducing. So it's important, therefore, that reinsurance capital forms part of your capital management thinking and planning and not just, I better buy some cat reinsurance this year. And the final point there, reinsurance operating best in the volatility space. And this is a bit of a generalisation from myself, but there probably is more capital and volatility benefit in paying a minimum rate on line for the top $1 billion of a cat program than paying a margin above loss cost for a very sort of attritional $100 million layer on a cat program. Theoretically, we can assess the merits of either option and prove which is the best return or the best alternative, but the final decision always gets back to that risk appetite of the actual insurance company. And finally, I might actually end up restating a couple of comments in a different context. But I want to actually sort of just look at some of the decisions around, you know, how do I actually, I've decided to buy reinsurance, so what am I going to do in terms of my counterparties? So reinsurance is part of One Capital's framework and shouldn't be considered in isolation. I tend to focus at Aon Benfield very much on the APRA reinsurance capital relief. Andrew, you know, you would have, you know, multiple sort of jurisdictions, if you like, in terms of how reinsurance is treated by rating agencies and other particular entities. Noting that we've qualified what the cost of reinsurance is, there's also the fact that when we purchase reinsurance, we're getting a mix of capital relief and earnings protection. And a great example now is the Lagic protections. Let's use some simple numbers. Assume that a company's 1 in 6 year loss, expected loss is $20 million. Under APRA's Lagic, we need to hold capital for four of those $20 million losses. So a 10 excess of 10 first event cover might cost us 25 rate on line and gives us $10 million of capital relief. A 10x 10x 30, a fourth event cover, might cost us 2% rate on line and provide the same level of capital relief. At first glance, the fourth event cover is a no-brainer. It costs $200,000 compared to $2.5 million for exactly the same APRA capital benefit. But we have to consider the earnings protection that first event protection, so the first event cover, is likely to give us. And trying to find that blend between buying a capital effective solution that actually is then going to give you earnings as well, is a challenge that we all need to sort of consider. In terms of counterparties, security is important. At Aon Benfield, we're spending a lot of time now, though, on looking at financial performance of companies. Reinsurers at the moment are all very strong. They have lots of capital. But are they going to be writing reinsurance for a number of years? Or are they going to be put into runoff because they're actually not delivering on the reinsurance business proposition that they set up, that they established? And we've seen instances where well-established and capitalised reinsurers have gone into runoff because they're not making the margins. Their security remains great, there are lots of capital there, but their claims-paying desire clearly changes with that particular dynamic. And trust me, it's one thing to actually have a recoverable on your balance sheet, you actually want it in your bank account. And dealing with runoff agencies, as some of you in the room will know, is not the most pleasant experience. I've got down there relationship. You know, our business is very much relationship focused, but it doesn't mean reinsurers saying yes all the time. It involves a professional, commercial, and consistent engagement at each renewal. And there's nothing wrong with a reinsurer saying no. And in fact, I sort of point out to my clients that, you know, if a reinsurer says no, it means that the price you're getting is actually probably a pretty good one. Capital charges are a proxy for security. Strategic versus capacity versus opportunistic is a way that we kind of characterise reinsurers at Aon Benfield. Each section is quite important. Your strategic partners tend to write all lines of business and therefore they'll have a whole relationship with you, a Swiss or a Munich, who'll write your liability and your catastrophe. Capacity providers tend to be cat specialists only and they're very important for the larger programs. And the opportunistic ones, and maybe Ty's going to answer the question as to whether the new capital guys are opportunistic or strategic, but they can be much more flexible And they may be willing to do unique deals to close out placements. They might be the most expensive on the placement, but they actually could be the most crucial at the end of the day. Domicile of reinsurer gets back a little bit too arbitrage in terms of efficiency. And I think I draw the note here about MAPFRE. So the domicile there is important because a very well-run and well-managed company suffered because of its Spanish domicile, and it was downgraded into the triple B range through kind of no fault of their own. And finally, the product offering. So from a reinsurance perspective, most people want to buy catastrophe, but you have a lot of other products that you want to reinsure. So do you want to engage with reinsurers who can do all those products, or do you want to look at it on a line-of-line basis? And the final point there I've got would be no surprise to anybody, this notion of sustainability and flexibility and marrying up long and short-term objectives in terms of reinsurance, but also in terms of your capital management. That concludes my introduction to reinsurance. I hope there's been some insight there for you. I thank you for your patience and attention. Thanks.